Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan Matthews. I'm Brett Cyphers, and we are absolutely pleased to be joined today by Representative Toby Overdorf. Ryan, you and the representative go back farther than I do. Tell me a little bit about what you know about him and what you like. Uh-oh.
Put me on the spot.
Yeah.
Right in front of him.
We're doing it.
My goodness. Well, I think first things first, the rep is our first second time guest.
That's right.
For the Florida Specifier Podcast. So obviously an award that will go down in history.
Indeed.
So we're thrilled to have him here. Representative Overdorf is entering his last session, believe it or not, in the legislature. We've had the opportunity to work together on a couple of different projects. He has certainly shown himself as a force within the Florida legislature because of his knowledge of environmental issues stemming from his professional background. We heard a number of months ago, actually last year at this conference, really more of an introduction to who he is, what the district looks like, some of the work that he's done before. So it's great to be back in 2025 and catch up again.
Yeah, and I think we spent a fair amount of time talking about your district and how you got there. I'd like, if you don't mind, and first of all, welcome, you know, let you talk.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, but love to hear more about that intersection between what it is you do for a living when you're not doing your other full-time job, which is being a legislator, how that intersects with the work that folks that are in this building right now, and that building being the Marriott Marco Island for Environmental Permitting Summer School. Tell us a little bit. Let's start there with your work, and then I want to move into the things that are important to you from that legislative standpoint going into, I think, your last year as a House member, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about your work, your business, and how that helps inform the work you do in the legislature.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to be on the Specifier again. This podcast, believe it or not, I listen to whenever you have a new episode, it pops up on, and so I will certainly listen to it. And I was grateful for the lead-in to the conference here because it made sure I was going to be here for the SCOTUS-WOTUS conversation and be a part of that. So yeah, I'm excited about that. And so we've done, in my firm now, it's called Haley Ward, and we are a national firm. I'm currently vice president with them, and I'm in charge of the Southeast United States for all of their environmental projects throughout the Southeast. And so that obviously is a wide encompassing geographical area, but also a wide encompassing area of various projects. So everything from wetland restoration to roadway projects to your high-end home to sea turtle work and gopher tortoise stuff. So what it does is it allows me to then see how our agencies are performing, how are the regulations and the rules performing for a variety of different things. And it also gives me an insight into the enforcement branch as well. The best clients in the world are the ones that call when they say, hey, I'm looking for this piece of property and I found a piece, so can you take a look at it? The highest paying clients are the ones that call you and say, hey, I'm in trouble, I did this. And so there's a whole variety there of that. And we really strive to help out with balancing the economics as well as the environmental regulations that we have across our state. And frankly, I think Florida has some of the best regulations of anywhere in the country. And I think we have some of the best regulators as well. Now, there are certainly some of those out there that I would love to see them choose a new career. But that being said, there are many folks out there that are really good at what they do. So it's been a pleasure to get to know them. And then that balance between that work being based in the city of Port St. Lucie, which has seen tremendous growth, and then our other offices, whether it's in Fort Myers or elsewhere, we're seeing different levels of growth throughout our state. Then balancing that going up to the state and saying, all right, 50% of our representatives are actually within the South Florida Water Management District, and 50% are senators as well. Yet a majority of them have never set foot in a wetland, have never set foot in an area outdoors, things that are prevalent in my world. And so if I'm able to then to impart some of that knowledge on them, and then that carries through, it's fantastic. You know, I was joined this year by a fellow engineering company cohort, and Bill Connerly, who's been just a great freshman, has had a good year and kind of imparted his wisdom there. But there are many others within the legislature that are certainly trying to look at ways we can do regulations either better, more efficiently, or have additional protection standards on them. So, you know, one of the ones that is coming through this year and is going to be implemented in January is the new stormwater regulations. pretty hard on that specific one, worked on the septic to sewer conversions and worked on a variety of different things there. So all of those things, we say those terms all the time, but what does it really mean? So I'm able to have those real life conversations where I have clients that are saying, hey, this is going to cost X, Y, and Z. And then you have to point out, well, it could cost, you know, A, B, and C and if you don't do it this way.
Right.
And then when you start to look at the overall ecosystem that we know as Florida, it's really evolving. But at the same time, you know, my mom says all the time, I can't believe you're doing all this development everywhere. There's going to be nothing left. And I said, in Martin County, I said, Mom, have you ever actually driven out 714 and seen that we have over 50% of the county that's preserved, either in state, county, or federal lands? Have you taken a drive across the state and seen what we're doing there as far as the wildlife corridor? And so it's great to be able to be a part of that and the restoration and knowing that, yeah, we do have a fair amount of folks that are on the coast, and that's where people choose to live. That's where industry has chosen to live, whether it be our transportation corridors or et cetera. So all of that I've been able to kind of bring up to Tallahassee and the mindfulness of conservation mixed with regulation.
Is that a big part of that, the process of being a legislator? So is there a lot of that you get to educate each other on different aspects, especially, and I'm thinking like the environmental issues, and you mentioned Bill Connerly, who's a new representative, you know, an engineer by mm-hmm. trade, so he understands the project side. You have folks, you know, like Representative Mooney, you know, from, you know, the Keys and understanding. Is there a lot of more interplay than maybe people see when you just look at a committee meeting or you just see what you're doing when you're on the floor?
Absolutely. There's a lot of interplay, and that's what I love about the House, is that we're able then to have those conversations. Whether you give somebody a call and say, hey, can we meet about XYZ? Tiffany Esposito is now she was a chair on budget for the natural resources this past year, and she had a tremendous learning curve, and she was asking all kinds of different questions. It was great to be able to sit with her a little bit, but at the same time, she had a good financial head on her. You look at Jason Schoaf had an initiative with FWC this year that was really making it more geocentric for a lot of the commissioners. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed that bill this year. That being said, I'd love to see it come back. I think that you do need to have that representative that is for your district, if you will. And I'm not sure exactly why the governor did that, despite his veto letter. But that being said, I think that's what really brings it more to the House, because Florida is such a diverse state from all the ecosystems, whether it's in the Panhandle or all the way down to the Keys. And, you know, you hit on it. And we have 120 individuals in the House and 40 in the Senate that bring their specialty, their geographic specialty into it. And so I think that's also another advantage that I have now, in that I'm statewide as far as my job. And so I'm able to see all kinds of different ecosystems, all kinds of different areas that either growth is happening or preservation is happening. And it's been a challenge, but I really enjoyed it.
In your professional capacity, we were having a conversation before we hit record. So, you know, specifically on the stormwater rule. Mm-hmm. So when you're counseling clients, I think everybody has started to digest the rule in its entirety. The practical application of the rule may be a different thing. I mean, what have your conversations with clients been based on, you know, not only the statement of, you know, estimated regulatory cost and the billion plus dollars, but what's the reaction been to clients on the stormwater rule?
Mixed, I will say, most certainly. The first reaction is, how soon can I get my permit so that I'm under the old rules? And so I don't have to completely redesign my site. The second is, oh, so I qualify for something that allows me to be grandfathered, so I don't have to worry about this right now. And then from then on, it's, all right, so when the new rules go into place, what is that going to cost me? And I think a lot of it is the area on the site. Every square foot in some of these places, especially when you're looking at a redevelopment site, every square foot is valuable. And so now as a consultant, I'm looking for ways that we can potentially alleviate some of that stress. You know, Jeff Littlejohn has done a great job on looking at water quality credits. And so I'm have been looking at that as well, and ways that we can do offsite water quality mitigation. And I think that's something that is going to be an emerging field throughout the state of Florida, but also will then lead to restoration work, lead to additional waters being held back, lead to potential additional groundwater, which then leads into I sat in today's East Coast water supply, and we're looking at some very serious water issues in the future. So The stormwater rule was something that was needed from a regulatory perspective because we've had BMAPs in place and TMDL levels forever, yet we haven't really ever done anything with them. And so I think it's, you know, it's critical to do that. I mean, you have a great insight on this, Ryan, from you know, being the DEP secretary and then allowing for the regulations that happened under you and springs restoration and things like that. But now we've got TMDL stuff that we have to get control of. I do not want to have another protest in Stewart on the St. Lucie River with green algae going by. I mean, I don't think any of us want that. Mm. You know, we just opened up the C-43. Prior to that, we opened up the C-44 reservoirs. So I think we're getting there, but the stormwater rule is something that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day.
Do you think from a legislative perspective that a majority of legislators understand or can consume the cost of natural resource protection in totality? I mean, you know, we always talk about the holy grail of environmental funding in the state of Florida and comparing it to the five-year work program the DOT has, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact of the matter and the truth is that it's expensive to protect natural resources and to preserve Florida as it has been. Do you think that the average legislator is aware of that cost?
Not at all. I sincerely believe that one of my calls is to educate my fellow legislators and looking at that cost. Right now we have restoration work that's going on, and it's fantastic restoration work, but what comes after that? Maintenance. If we don't maintain these areas, and when I say maintenance, I mean exotic removal, I mean cleaning out these areas that fill with silt, looking at ways that we can manage the areas better, then we're just going to be doing it all over again, and it'll cost three times as much because by that time, construction costs have gone up. So we have to find ways to do this management, and I think that is a challenge that we haven't embraced too much yet. And looking at that exotic removal, I mean, right now I've got municipalities that say, hey, as a developer, when you're done, before you get your CO, you have to prove that all of the exotic vegetation has been removed from your property and from all the developed area. Well, why isn't that municipality doing the same thing in their areas? Why isn't, you know, and then I lead into the state. Why isn't the state doing a better job of doing this management? And for the municipalities in the state, it comes down to money, but they really hammer home this on all your POAs out there, on all of the developments. And so we have to look at a way of kind of having that more of an equitable approach to land management, because maybe that state park, maybe that county park is now adding a seed source to the POA that's right next door, then the POA is required to remove it all. So I'm getting way down a rabbit hole on that. I realize that, but I mean, it's how it encompasses.
Yeah, Brian Armstrong made a point in this morning's session that over 50% of Swift Mud's assets are over 45 years old. And I mean, when you talk about infrastructure, maintenance of infrastructure, certainly, you know, the assets of Swift Mud of South Florida mm-hmm. are extensive.
Right now in South Florida, they're looking at an $85 million hole just for maintenance, just for maintenance of structures. And that is a critical item.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people talk about, you know, these expenses. And that's why I think it's interesting to use the word brave, but it takes a certain mentality to go into something and say, this has been the subject of, you know, let's say, you know, quasi neglect for a couple of decades. You can say, this is where we're going to take this stand and we have to deal with it. But it's an expensive problem to deal with, which is kind of puts a lot of pressure on you and your colleagues. When you look at some of these expenses, you know, moving in, do you feel that kind of pressure when you're back in your district from constituents on that cost side? I mean, you deal with developers all the time. Is it as simple as what you said earlier, which is, you know, this is the easy way, guys. Like, we have a big problem. We've got to do this. You know, I get it's expensive. We'll try to find our way to clever our way through to, mm-hmm. you know, to get what we need. Is like, but do you feel that pressure as you move around the state?
Absolutely. Being a fiscal conservative myself and finding ways then that we're utilizing taxpayer dollars, we have to be conservative with those dollars and make sure that they're being done at the highest and best use, if at all possible. And so we look for, you know, waste and fraud and those areas. And there's a ton of it. And we're seeing some of that merge in some of the work that we've been doing recently. So there's ways I think we can do this better. I feel it every day, no doubt about it. But at the same time, We've taken on big issues in the state, whether it be education, where we were dead last in funding, and now we've worked our way through that process. We've made a commitment to this. We, with the Everglades restoration, we were way behind with that. Under this governor and under the legislature that I've been able to serve in, we have gone way ahead with that. And now we're ahead of the federal government in funding and waiting for them to catch up again. It was going well under the first term 45 President Trump, and then it dropped off under President Biden, and now we're back on track again, it seems like, under 47 Trump. So I really believe that we can handle these big issues as long as we kind of know what it is that we're going to be doing, and then focus forward. I mean, this year we had some contentious budget issues, and those contentious budget issues were, hey guys, we need to plan for the future, and where can we actually cut rather than spend? And I think that was a very enlightening issue, because this money is not always going to be there. The growth may not always be there. And as a result, we have to be responsible associated with that. And people were asking me back home, why are you all not getting along up there? I said, well, we are getting along. It's just whose tax cuts are better is really what it boiled down to in the end. So I look at that responsibility. And of course, now I'm serving as the co-chair of the Property Tax Committee. And this is something now that we're looking at statewide. And how do we look at cutting property taxes, because it is a major thing that everyone has to pay across the state. How do we look at cutting that, balancing that with services, and then do it so that across the state, we had one proposal that said, well, let's just do a $500,000 homestead exemption. And I had a member from that's on my committee say, look, you know, 85 or 90% of my homes in my county aren't even worth $500,000. That will completely bankrupt our county if we do it that way. So we have to apply this the same from Miami-Dade to Liberty County and find ways that we can do that. So I think that's been a challenge. It's going to continue to be that way. I'm excited about that prospect. That's also where I'm able to bring in that statewide perspective from my job and then my relationships with the men and women in the legislature as well.
I'm glad you brought that up. And I mean, selfishly, as someone who represents a host of local governments, you know, certainly there are a lot of eager eyes on your committee and that you're co-chairing with Representative Lopez and sort of what the end result will be, right? And I think everybody is cognizant of the fact that relief is probably necessary in some form or fashion. You then have the scary hypothetical, because the fact of the matter is, to your point, there are cities out there whose ad valorem collection doesn't even cover their police and fire service. So it's that balance of where can we give the homeowner some cut while still providing the same expectation of services that local governments do provide. So, I mean, it's certainly a daunting task that you have in front of you.
Well, I think the only thing that's off the table right now is that we're going to have a complete revocation of property taxes. I think that's the only thing that's off the table. How we get to lowering of property taxes, everything is on the table there right now. And we've had proposals that include everything from a larger waiver when you pay early, going from 4% to 8% and so on down and forth there. We've had looking at ways that we can do additional homestead exemptions. We have a way of looking at the property itself and looking at should we be increasing the values as quickly as we are? Should we be increasing the assessments as much? It's going to 10% every year for a non-homesteaded property. Is that really what we should be doing? I mean, we've seen revenues now, they're ticking up to $60 billion in property taxes across our state. It's up $17 billion just in the last 4 years. So are we getting $17 billion worth of services and goods from that $17 billion of raise? So that's something that we're looking hard at across the board. And we're realizing also that the ad valorem taxes for most municipalities, roughly about 32% of their total budget. Now there's outliers of that, of course. There's I can think of at least one municipality, it's 98% of their budget. Another, it's about 10% of their budget. So again, it goes to a variety of places.
That's a huge undertaking, and you have one more year in the House, and it feels like that may not be a 12-month issue. And so what does the future look like for you in participating in those enormous public policy discussions? Is it another elected office? I mean, what's the plan next spring?
Well, I appreciate that. As you may have heard, I have announced for the Senate seat, Senate District 31, and currently occupied by Senator Harrell. She's done a great job and has provided a lot of consistency over the years in her votes, et cetera. That being said, I wanted to get out and get in front of that. And so we're going to be running, and the election would not happen until 28. She actually got 2 bonus years. So she's going to be working there for at least 3 more sessions. And that being said, we are going to be working hard because this will be a constitutional amendment, of course, for the property tax. And so I imagine I will be front and center in working on the property tax constitutional amendment. And the product that we end up with, I can guarantee you I'll be working hard to make sure that that gets passed. And so we'll be working around the state on that process. And then, of course, looking at campaigning as well at some point for Senate and finding some ways to get back into office, if you will. I'd love to continue the public service. I've enjoyed it. We talk about all the bills and things. You know, I've been very blessed. Out of our senior class, I've actually passed the most bills of anybody in my class. I've been very blessed that way and fortunate to work with great people in and out of the legislature. And so that's been something that I've really enjoyed. So I'd like to continue that within the Senate. But the other side of that is the constituent services. You know, we've had some really good opportunities to work with people, whether it was through COVID and getting some people literally out of countries and getting them back here. We have some great new charter programs, but the money wasn't always following the child. So getting in and being a part of that and getting that money going forward. We had a gentleman back home that a mortgage fraud was happening with him, and he was just about to lose his home. And we got involved, got the Office of Insurance Regulation involved, and the CFO's office, and Jimmy Petronas involved at the time. Boom, it was cured. So those are the things that I think I remember even more so that, and I think that's a lot of our legislators should be doing more of that constituent services that really help out those folks. And so I've enjoyed that. We've had a good team back home. It's helped us out with that. I can't take credit for it all. My staff has been very, very good at doing that. So I'd love to continue that opportunity, and hopefully in 2028 we'll be successful with that endeavor and get sworn in as a senator.
So for the short term, you'll only have 1 full-time position.
Yes, sir. Yep. Well, we'll see. Well, there's certainly some opportunities that are sitting out there. I think it's no lie, or it's no hidden secret. I've endorsed Byron Donalds. I really do believe that he's going to be our next governor. And so I'm anxious to help him in any way that I possibly can and do whatever I can to make sure that he's successful in that endeavor. And we'll see what happens in this politically charged state, shall we say.
To say the least.
Yep, no doubt. And we'll see how much our feds play into it. And yeah.
Well, now that that's out there, I'd kind of have to unpeel it a little bit. So yeah. Hypothetical, right? If we have Governor Donalds, who has made no secret of his embracing of environmental issues, specific water issues, what do you think that means for Florida? I mean, it seems like we would open up just sort of a new avenue or a different avenue in terms of, you know, a focus on water policy. Not that Governor DeSantis has not done that. We've seen
Certainly.
What he's done in the
He's
other
done
plates.
A great job of that.
He's
yep.
done an amazing job. But how do you think a Donalds administration would differ? And what do you think his focus would be specifically in the environmental front?
Well, he still has a big price tag that's out there. And most people don't realize that he still has a $15 billion and or $30 billion price tag. It's still coming that the state will have to come up with. So that's one item. But I think the planning that he's looking for in what we're going to have to tackle is water supply. That's going to be a major issue as Florida continues to grow. How do we make sure that our citizens have clean water? How does that delivered to everybody? And how do we continue to maintain a clean environment? I mean, without that clean environment, you're not going to have a great state. And that's, I think, something that we definitely want to continue and those discussions continue. So infrastructure is a big issue. And when I say infrastructure, I mean the natural world. I also mean transportation. And I think there's some different ways that we can be doing transportation under the Donalds administration and looking at opportunities there. And there's also ways that we can be looking at water as well as energy. It's another secret that I'm a big proponent for small modular nuclear. And these are ways that I think that we can utilize land efficiently, we can utilize technology well, and we can deliver power in a way that allows for us not to have a tremendous amount of waste. And we have to expand the nuclear side as a green energy. And it's a safe way to deliver this. And I'm a huge proponent of it. So hopefully before he leaves Congress, we're going to be able to work with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and allow for some of these units to be installed within the state of Florida. I think that will certainly help. And I'm a huge advocate of that. And hopefully that will be part of his administration, too.
Very insightful.
Well, I'll just say, like, you've always made yourself accessible. I think the next time that you're on, we owe you, is it a green or gold jacket, something like that. But I've appreciated you've made yourself accessible in talking to the folks out there that want to hear some of this, back room or inside baseball from what you're doing, And so I know for me, I know Ryan feels the same way. We appreciate that. And we hope you come back on again really soon, kind of talk through as it moves forward, next session and beyond, hopefully.
Well, I'd love that. I'm grateful to be on the Specifier podcast. I certainly read the Specifier as well, and we have it to our employees now in the environmental division. We have them looking at it as well. And so it kind of gives us an idea of what's happening on a statewide basis. And I'm immersed in it every day, but y'all are able to then also make it accessible to the average Joe out there. So keep up that great work. I sincerely appreciate it. And I'll certainly be listening as you progress and banter back and forth between whether it be three or four of you at times.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Toby.
Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen, and don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, it's typically Brett's fault, so please be sure to let him know, but don't hold it against the rest of us. I recommend subscribing to the Florida Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com, and you can read your environmental news and commentary the new, old-fashioned way.
Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Jeff Littlejohn, Ryan Matthews, and the always terrible Brett Cyphers, I'm Patrick Gillespie, and we'll see you next time.